All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Watch Well podcast. My name is Parker, and this is my co-host, Nick. And we're finally in the Ohio studio.
Yeah. Yeah. Last time we were in my little makeshift area. This is nice. This is the first time I've been here since you've had it set up like this. So,
yeah. Nice. And as always, how was your week?
I was on vacation last week.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
It was a great week. Gulf Shores, Alabama on the beach. It was a little chilly, but it was a really good week. So other than that, no worries, no concerns. Worries. Yeah.
We aren't wearing our shirts. That's one thing that we forgot to do is we should have wore our shirts.
Yeah, I didn't even bring mine with me.
Yeah.
I should have brought it.
That would have been funny because yeah. I got mine in the other room. Cool. So before we get started, guys, I just wanted to ask you to, just a couple of housekeeping things. We've got a lot of big stuff in the works for the podcast that we're really excited for, a couple of contacts that we may have made. I don't want to release anything quite yet, but if you could do me a favor, and for those of you that watch on YouTube, if you could please go to our Facebook page, like and follow our Facebook page, along with Instagram, and then our Twitter, and you can find us on Twitter at WatchWellPod. Follow, like, follow Twitter, do all that stuff for us. That would be really helpful with us getting to more people. And then also, if you could go follow me on Twitter, you have Facebook, or are you really active, or?
Oh, I'm not active at all.
Active,
yeah, I'm not
active.
That's one of the areas where I'm not that great.
Yeah. No, that's okay. But if you guys could go follow me at Twitter, I am at Real Parker Brown on Twitter. I'm pretty active on Twitter. Love Twitter. It's actually a lot of fun. I probably need to be on Twitter less because it can get me into trouble. It is so fun.
Really?
I love it.
You just enjoy it?
I just love it because there's so many people on there right now that are, at least whatever is, I don't know, my algorithm or something comes up and it's a lot of people saying a lot of biblically based things.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no filter, man. They are unashamed of the gospel and it's great. And then there's other people who are not and it's a dog pile.
Yeah. Yeah. So I bet it's the extremes,
it's the society. Wild West and it's so fun. I need to check my mic here. Yeah, we're good. Okay. Sorry for the audio. Cool. So if you could go follow the accounts, that would be great. And if you're new, welcome. We are right here on YouTube. The first and third Friday of every month, we release a movie review episode. And if you're new, we're the Watch Well podcast, and we review movies through the lens of Scripture. Kind of like we kind of build the podcast around Acts 17:22, and we, kind of try to model the Apostle Paul when he goes to the Areopagus on Mars Hill and he preaches to the people on on Mars Hill with all their idols. And he finds the unknown idol to the unknown, or the idol to the unknown God.
Yep.
And unknown he says God. He uses that as a gateway to preach about the true God of Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And we do the same thing. We just use Hollywood as our Areopagus, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And we use movies to just demonstrate the gospel and the biblical truths, plain as they are. And even if movie producers, actors, directors don't believe, they can't help but tell the stories that are only capable by a God who created everything and what's written on our hearts and all of those things. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of wanted to remind everybody of that, put that out there for one of the newer episodes. I think it's been a minute since we've kind of mentioned those things.
Check mine too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make sure that everybody's on, kind of on the same page. So that's kind of our thing. We love talking about movies. So in short, our podcast is for the movie buff who's serious about their Christian faith.
Absolutely.
I think that's all I got.
Covered it.
Awesome.
Check out our trailer, too. Yeah. If you go to our YouTube page, you got the trailer up there.
Yeah, it's pinned at the top.
Yep.
I think I shared that on Twitter today, but it was I retweeted and added somebody.
Okay.
I sent it to them.
And you don't know who?
I can't remember.
You're just on Twitter so much nowadays, right?
The last couple of days, I'm averaging like 30 tweets a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm pretty active.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of fun.
So are all of those on Watchwell or are they on your personal?
They're on my personal one.
Your personal one.
At Real Parker Brown. Yeah.
All right.
You'll have to, I don't know. You may tune into my Twitter and be like, I don't want to be on this
podcast. Yeah, I don't want to be around. Can't handle this.
Cool. So we don't wait you, or we won't hold you guys any longer. We will get to the movie. So this movie that we are doing today is Wonka.
Wonka.
The new Wonka movie.
Yeah.
This is so cool that I get to actually look at you in person and have a conversation.
And, you know, we just spent like 2 hours downstairs
at
the dining room table talking to. So
it's so great, man. It's so great.
Yeah.
Okay, so Wonka, you want to take us away, Nick?
Yeah, so Wonka is 2023, just released in December of this past year. Great. I'm getting ahead of myself here, but very popular. It was a very, very popular movie. Rating is PG. It was, and again, it's very popular, made $631 million worldwide, had an 83% Rotten Tomatoes score, 7.2 IMDb score. I'm going to skip the letterbox because a lot of people don't really follow that much. And then plugged in movie reviews. So they rate movies based on the content for kids and whether kids should be viewing it, and, or really whether anybody should be viewing it. So they rate Wonka as a medium for kids, light for teens, and light for adults. Mm-hmm. So as we usually do, any initial thoughts on those ratings?
I think spot on.
Spot on. Yeah. So with that, Wonka is based, I'm just going to read the synopsis. Wonka. I need to slow down a little bit here.
We're excited.
Yeah, this is fun. Wonka is based on the extraordinary character at the center of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Roald Dahl's most iconic children's book and one of the best-selling children's books of all time, Wonka tells the wondrous story of how the world's greatest inventor, magician, and chocolate maker became the beloved Willy Wonka we know today. Anything from that? Any thoughts on the synopsis?
This is absolutely a kid's movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I would put this up with, like, if I didn't know anything about this movie and you sat me in front of a screen and hit play, I didn't see any of the opening credits or nothing, I would have thought it was a Disney movie.
Mm-hmm. Has that tone, has like that very lighthearted, easy, you know, maybe not modern Disney, but very easy to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Type of feel to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll keep the other thoughts.
Yeah.
As we keep going. I don't want to get ahead of myself either.
Okay. Yeah. So I agree with you. It's definitely a kid's movie, which is different, probably different than all of the previous versions of Willy Wonka. So, like, you go back to the 70s. I don't know if you've seen them.
Yeah.
Like the Gene Wilder, where he plays Willy Wonka.
I mean, that's my favorite one out of
Those probably are a little bit more serious, or at least they take themselves more seriously than
That's got like the you seen Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?
Mm-hmm.
That's got the very same tone as Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's probably from relatively similar times,
similar eras,
but yeah, it's very much different than Sensational. Because then the next one was the Johnny Depp.
Yeah, the Johnny Depp one.
Which, like, I think I've only seen one time.
Yeah.
But the tones are very different. It's a little bit more family drama. Like, you would think maybe you see it on ABC Family or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure they maybe even played it a couple of times. But this was very much in between those two extremes.
Yeah.
You have the Gene Wilder original, 70s?
I think 70 or 71, and somewhere around there. Yeah.
The, Johnny Depp's Willy Wonka.
Yeah, which is Tim Burton. Tim Burton was who directed that. So that one's like got its own quirks and it definitely has some dark undertones.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Which I love Tim Burton stuff.
Do you?
Yeah. I'm not like a super geek fan, but I do like I like the darker tone of those.
Yeah. Yeah, but definitely the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory from early 2000s. There's an undertone of like, I feel like I'm going to overstate it, but I don't know another word to use, but like sinisterness. But I think really what I'm coming back to is just the dark feel of the movie as opposed to this is I think you're spot on when you say this one is absolutely a kid's movie.
Yeah.
Like, it is made for whole families to enjoy together.
Like, I would have no issue letting any one of my kids watch it at any age.
Right.
At any age. And then the only reason why they wouldn't want to is because they wouldn't understand what's going on. So, like, the maturity of understanding would come before, like, parental guardian, and, like, guidance on, filtering content.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, very much more lighthearted than Tim Burton's Willy Wonka or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So this movie was directed by Paul King. Have you ever heard that name before? Have you heard the name of Paul King as a film director before?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Okay, so neither had I before, you know, looking up the info for Wonka. Turns out he has not directed many films. So the reason that we like to talk about this kind of thing, talk about directors and things like that, is because if you want to know what is behind a movie, or you want to know what the meaning or themes or what the message in a movie is or in a film, then you should really, one of the things that you should do is look to the director. Who is the one making the movie? Who's the one responsible for making decisions about casting, decisions about, this is what I want this scene to look like. Why did they make that? So there's just a lot of things that you can learn, usually, if it's a well-known director. Based on a director's past, you can learn some of the things that they would typically try to present. And so Paul King previously directed three films. His first film was something called Bunny in the Bowl from 2009. I have absolutely no clue whatsoever. I've never heard of it, so I can't really draw anything from that. And then his second two films were Paddington and Paddington 2.
Okay.
So without knowing anything about Bunny in the Bowl, with Paddington and Paddington 2, again, spot on with the fact that this is a kids movie.
Right.
Because those two
make sense.
All out kids movies.
And they follow.
Yeah, sure, so it absolutely makes sense that his version of Wonka would be this type of very lighthearted, easy story to get into, to follow. Kids of any age can watch it and know what's going on. So it makes sense that he would do that, and he would have that style here with Wonka. And because I don't know much about him, I also wanted to look up some quotes. What do people say about him as a director? And I found an article from Collider. And so the author of this article, her name is Mackenzie Kingston. Collider's a website, a movie news and things like that. It's a website I used to follow a long time ago. I don't really do that anymore. But this article came up. So in talking about Paul King's style and each of these three films, it says each of these films bears King's signature blend of oddball humor, surreal artsy visuals and set designs, and tear-jerking emotional maturity. So that's what he's known for in his films, is this type of artsiness, this set design, very intricate set design, and then these tear-jerking emotional moments. So again, I think Wonka probably lives up to some of that, and that's just more par for the course for films that he's made. It's right in line with his style, and so some directors are just kind of like, they seem like they're just directors for hire, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of the Marvel movies, there's not a lot of differentiation based on who directs those, right? You know, anybody can jump in because they already have their vision completely set. A director doesn't need to come in and impose their own vision on those films. Someone like Christopher Nolan comes in and directs something, because you mentioned The Dark Knight, it becomes his entirely. Every film has a specific tone.
J.J. Abrams is the same way. Yeah.
So like there's directors like that, and it seems like he's either choosing
Michael Bay,
for good or bad, right?
Right.
So it seems like Paul King, the director of Wonka, he's either choosing movies to fit into that kind of lightheartedness, or he's coming in and then making them so, right? Mm-hmm. He's adapting to his style, which, you know, honestly, probably it's a minority of directors that actually do that. I think the majority probably just get the job directed as they're told to, and then move on from there. And maybe there's other things maybe they want to do.
Maybe there's like a signature thing that they do or put in, and for sure.
Right. Yeah. So moving on from that, there's not, because he hasn't directed a lot of films, I don't think there's a lot
that we can really. I have not seen either Paddington.
Yeah, I haven't either. I've seen the first one. It's been a very long time. I've only seen it once or twice, and I think that was just kind of on in the
background. Was it a musical?
No.
It wasn't a musical?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think so.
I was curious. So Wonka is the first musical he's directed.
Wonka is the first musical that he has directed. And just a kind of fact about Wonka, it is the highest earning. So this is a mouthful. So I've got to get my words right. The highest earning live action musical, not counting Disney remakes.
Okay.
Right, because they kind of. That's kind of cheating.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like you get Aladdin and Lion King.
They're stealing the capital.
So non-Disney live action musical, this is the number one grossing movie in that category.
Yeah, I would not, like it doesn't, super, like, it shocks me in a way, but that will come up later.
Okay.
It shocks me in a way, but it also, like I'm not super, like it's not super shocking.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'll unpack that a little bit later, but as we keep going.
Yeah. So what's your review?
Like my review,
not talking about Bible things, but just your review of the film.
So I would say it's difficult for me to give a review because I knew nothing about this movie going into it.
Mm-hmm. Did you know that it was a musical?
No.
Okay.
So, and I actually enjoy musicals.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay with musicals. I mean, like I'm not a super musical person, like musical movie person where I like go seek them out, but there are musicals out there that like I would choose to watch over other non-musical movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Chicago or, now I'm not going to be able to think of any of them.
The Greatest Showman.
Well, yeah. And I was going to bring that up. So. The only reason why the numbers shock me with the grossing is because of that movie.
That was number one before Wonka.
Okay.
So
that does make sense. So, okay, I gotcha. Anyway, beside the point, my review is that I was actually a little bored.
Really?
Yeah, I was a little bored. And I think, I don't know if it's fair to the movie to place the blame on the movie because I was bored.
Okay, that's interesting.
I think I was bored because my favorite part of Willy Wonka is being fascinated by his factory.
Okay, and that doesn't exist yet.
That doesn't exist. Right. And when I think of Wonka, I thought the movie was going to be more about him. It was very similar, but it was almost like it was a prequel to my expectation.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So I wanted something before Gene Wilder's movie.
But not this far.
But not that far in the past.
In the past, yeah.
Right? And I think that that's why I was a little let down. Because I was let down and bored through the entire movie until the very last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
When he started creating the chocolate factory. And I was like, this is amazing.
This is what I wanted the whole time.
That emotional payoff of like, I spent an hour, what is it, an hour and a half?
Or something. I don't know how long. And it's not incredibly long.
And not incredibly long. So I was like, I spent all this time putting all of this emotional capital into this story, and the entire time I'm like, there's no payoff. And then at the very end, the last 5 minutes, he builds the chocolate factory, and I wanted more about the idea of the golden ticket, not necessarily his origin story.
Okay.
So I wanted, because like, There were hints at the movie of the golden ticket, you know, at the very end when he opens up the chocolate bar. Sorry, spoiler alert. Like we kind of gotten lazy on the spoiler alerts.
Yeah.
But our last movies have been kind of old.
Yeah, they've been older. Yeah, Forrest Gump was just released as we're recording this today. Yeah.
So, go check Forrest Gump out. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
That
would have been a good intro.
Yeah.
Throw that out there.
We really got to figure this out. Anyway, he opens the chocolate bar. It's got six pieces and he's got it's kind of a gold wrapper. And that was kind of a hint to, I think, the golden ticket a little bit. But I wanted more of like, he's got the chocolate factory, he encounters a problem, and I wanted to know more about the golden tickets.
Yeah.
And then it goes right into, and it ends right before, like, maybe Charlie gets the bar. Or he said, like, right. Like, something like that.
Yeah. So you have, you get, so you were hoping to at least come right up to the point
yeah.
where the Gene Wilder movie yeah. picks up.
So that's why I was bored. Now, if I would have known a little bit about it and could have prepared, I think maybe my expectations would not have been in a different storyline.
Yeah.
And it would like, and I would have been able to enjoy the movie a little bit better. Now, I think the music was underwhelming.
Okay.
I think the lyrics of the songs were good. There mm-hmm. were a few times where I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I like the idea. You know, one of the very first songs, not when he's coming in on the boat, but when he's got the chocolate jar.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm going to share my chocolate. And it's the first time he's kind of out in public and they start floating.
Mm-hmm.
I like that song.
Yeah.
And then there were a couple other songs. I like the Scrub song.
Scrub It?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Scrub It.
Scrub, Scrub.
Scrub,
yeah.
Scrub. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. When he built that contraption to help to so that
with
he
the dog
away with the dog. Yeah. So I thought that was clever. So I thought there were clever parts. I thought mm-hmm. but I think if you compare it to The Greatest Showman, the music and the meanings behind the songs just don't compare.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, spoiler alert, I don't know when what order these are being released in, but we're going to record an episode on The Greatest Showman too. And if you're comparing the music in the two films, yeah, I think, yeah, it's not even really a comparison. The Greatest Showman, melodically, like, it's just incredible from a music standpoint. So I actually saw this twice in theaters. And the first time, not necessarily because it was my choice, but the first time that we went to see it, we were looking for, it was in December, so during Christmas break mm-hmm. from school, and we were looking for some things to do with the kids. And, you know, like, that's something that's incredibly difficult for our family specifically because the kids are 9 years apart.
Right.
So when we want to go see a movie, we've got to find something that appeals to a 15-year-old,
right,
and a 6-year-old,
right,
and it's like there's just not many things that appeal to both of those.
And to make it even worse, you have male and female.
Male and female, yeah. So 15-year-old male, 15-year-old boy, and a 6-year-old girl.
Right.
Like 6-year-old loves drama and emotion and like
get further apart
sass, and then yeah. and then 15-year-old's kind of calm. Quiet.
Yeah, you can't get any yeah, further apart. You
can't get more different. So the 15-year-old, sometimes we're just like, you know, we're going to go see this movie. If you want to come, we want you to come with us because we want you to be a part of it.
Yeah.
But we know.
We totally understand.
You don't have to come.
Right, right.
And so he actually came. He came to this movie. And so that was a really good thing. And honestly, this is one of the few movies I think we could have watched that would appeal to both.
Yeah.
To both age groups. So
would he have liked Greatest Showman?
You know, I didn't ask him. We watched that together too, and I didn't ask him his opinion. I don't know if he liked it. He was kind of upset that we were watching it together as a family because he wanted to go play video games or something, but I don't remember. I don't think I asked him his opinion of it, so I don't know if he liked it.
That's super interesting because they're both, they have a different feel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know, and I don't know if it's because of the characters or like what, but I would expect him to like Wonka more than Greatest Showman.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. And then
I think the story applies a little bit more than superficially, I'm speaking.
If you just I'm actually going to get into that in a second. I'm going to jump ahead of myself if we get too far into that conversation.
Okay. I don't want to break the
So my first impressions were just that. It was just, I was excited to be sitting in a movie that I could tell right off the bat, okay, I can tell that this, whether they actually like the movie or not, this is going to be a type of movie that if it's well done, if it's a good film, they'll enjoy it, right?
Right.
Wholesome.
Wholesome,
yeah. And we don't have to worry about anything. You know, there's not any big fight scenes that the 15-year-old would love with, like, you know, weapons and things like that, gore, you know, that the 6-year-old can't see or shouldn't see. So I was incredibly excited about that. But When we went to see it, I had no clue that it was going to be a musical either.
Okay.
The theater. And then I got online afterwards, and apparently no one did. Like, fans of this movie went to the theater completely unaware of the fact that this was a musical. And I guess it was an intentional effort on the part of the studio to not market it as a musical, to market it solely as an origin story like the previous Wonkas.
I mean, it's smart because more people can go see it.
Yeah, and then not market it as a musical. So you kind of trick people into seeing this a film or a type of film that they might have been turned off by, and then it becomes, you know, the most popular of that genre. So, I mean, right. You know, all power to him. It was successful. It worked for him. So beyond that, I think the lighthearted nature of the movie, some of the jokes and things that were really easy to get, you know, like the first thing that comes to mind is every time someone says poor, that one of the chocolate cartel members like throws gags, dry heaves.
Yeah.
Like that, I thought that was funny and that was appealing to both. And then just like the easy story of here's a main character who is just pursuing a dream, right? Like he, but on a deeper level. So for the 6-year-old, he's just pursuing a dream and she starts to like that main character because she feels attached to that main character because she wants to see him live out his dream, right? Because that's the goal that Wonka has. But then on a deeper level, you have like the abandonment issues and you have like Wonka losing his mom. You have Noodle being an orphan and you have like all of these dynamics at play that they don't ever really, they never go like fully into those things, but they're there and they do add some depth for older people, like older kids and things like that to watch it and for adults. So I thought that part of it was successful. I kind of agree with you on the songs. The songs are kind of...
It's almost like they were like turned down.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean in volume. I just mean in like when you watch The Greatest Showman.
Oh yeah, it's like a rock opera.
Yeah,
like you couldn't necessarily call the genre rock of the songs, but it's like in your face from the beginning, music wise.
But every song is a banger, man. Like, yeah, they are good.
Yeah,
musically, lyrically, perform like all of it.
Yeah,
it's like you could go and it's a concert.
Yeah,
this absolutely. This is like karaoke compared to, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it was like, okay, we have these lines that they want to say. Like, we want our character to say these lines,
like
put them to a tune.
Yeah,
it was an afterthought. There's some catchy melodies and some good things like that, but it's
That doesn't also mean that it's bad.
Right.
Because I enjoyed some of the songs, but it's like listening to, you know, a normal, stereotypical, old school Christmas song, and then switching over to Pentatonics or the Grand Siberian, like the
Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely is kind of like that. But as far as acting goes, I thought all of the villains of the movie were head and shoulders above anyone else.
I agree.
Like, so I think, so you had Mrs. Scrubbit.
Even over Wonka?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't impressed.
You weren't with Timothy Chalamet?
No, I thought he was just kind of dry. Kind of flat. There wasn't any quirkiness to his character. And I thought every time that he tried to portray like that type of quirkiness that the other like Wonka's. Depp and Gene Wilder, it came across like he was acting.
Okay.
So like it's kind of a fine line, but sometimes you can see that line. Like sometimes the difference between somebody who like when you watch them on screen, it's as if they've become that person.
Yeah.
And this is just them living versus like somebody who's trying to pretend.
Yeah.
And I felt like, I think Timothy Chalamet is a good actor. Like he was in a movie called he was in a movie with Steve Carell called Beautiful Boy about addiction. And he's absolutely incredible. Like I was concerned that he was actually an addict.
Okay.
Like, that's how good he does in that movie. So I love him as an actor. I just thought that this portrayal of Wonka came across like he was pretending.
And maybe that's, there's something to say there too, is like, now that I'm thinking about it, it's often easy to forget that the greatest showman, I think, you know, if you're in the comments and you know this, you know, comment down below, but it's, I think that they selected the actors and actresses based off of their musical talents and performance talents first, and then their acting ability second. Yeah. And it was almost as if for Wonka, they picked the acting ability first and then were like, well, now we need to choreograph dance scenes and you need to dance and then you need to sing. It's not like, Hugh Jackman is a singer that just happens to be Wolverine.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not Wolverine that learned how to sing so that he could do the greatest show. You know what I'm saying? It's like kind of the same way with Zac Efron. Like he was musically trained in dance as well before he was like a basketball player in High School Musical.
Right. Yeah.
And then he just, because of that character, he was just branded as like the cool athlete because that's what his character was. But he was trained in the other first. And maybe that's why it was a softer punch, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought all the villains really outshined everybody. So like specifically all three members of the Chocolate Cartel.
Right.
I thought like, I can't remember their names off the top of my head, but
they were funny. They were funny.
I thought they were awesome. They were like they were the highlight every time they were on screen.
And then Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant. He did. Yeah. He was pretty good as an Oompa Loompa. Yeah.
I think if I had to pick my favorite, it'd be him.
It'd be him.
Because I actually turned to Kayla and I was like, I really like Hugh Grant as an Oompa Loompa.
Yeah.
I said that in the middle of the movie, so I got to stay consistent on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess there's some controversy about that, though, because this is the first time that an Oompa Loompa wasn't portrayed by an actual dwarf actor.
So was that appropriation?
I don't know. I don't know exact. So it was a criticism of the film because the 70s version actually employed real dwarf actors and didn't use special effects or anything. Same with the Tim Burton version.
Yeah.
And so this was the first time that an Oompa Loompa was portrayed by a non-dwarf actor. It didn't bother me. I didn't have an issue with it, but there was controversy.
Yeah, but you know the controversy and like the victim Olympics. You know, America is in a bad place when you aren't sure which way the victimhood is going to turn. Are they upset because they didn't employ the dwarfs and they were like jobless, like they didn't have the jobs, you know, like equal representation, equity, all those things, right? Or was it because a normal person was appropriating or both? Yeah. Like it just,
it might have been both.
It may have been both.
It could have been both. But I think the criticism that I read was more so that, you know, there's a limited number of these roles and so therefore they should go to those people. Again, didn't upset me, but that's the criticism that I read. But then also Keegan-Michael Key as the police chief. I thought he was awesome.
Yeah, Balake.
Yeah. He was hilarious. Like,
pretty good.
He was
when he got stuck in the car.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time you see him, he's fatter and fatter and fatter and fatter, gained more weight because of all the chocolate that he has, the unlimited supply.
It's so stupid. Of,
it is so ridiculous. That's why it works. That's why it worked. Because
it was
because
they were able to harness that lighthearted aura. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't work if they don't have that over easy feel.
Yeah.
They let it breathe really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought all that was great. That was great. So, I enjoyed it. And then the only reason that I went and saw it again is because my daughter wanted to do a daddy daughter date. And we did that. So we went to a restaurant and went to see a movie. And literally the only movie in theaters at the time that was appropriate for her to see was to go see Wonka again. So
nice.
So that's what we're doing. So I enjoyed it.
I'm excited to get into Bible stuff.
Yeah. So I don't really, this is going to be interesting because as it relates to, you know, the watch well stuff that we usually do, when it comes to Wonka, because of its lightheartedness, it's, you know, the, kind of easy to follow story, I think you could probably come up with so many different things. Like there's tons of things about, you know, about ingenuity, creativity, and things like that. So that, you know, like the creativity of Wonka, we could talk about, and maybe we will talk about some of these things, but you could talk about the differences between capitalism and crony capitalism. And like, because you could see that dynamic right. play out in the film. And then, okay, now where does the Bible fit into that? You know, like, would the Bible support capitalism? Because when a lot of people think about, when they say the word capitalism, they think of crony capitalism. They don't think of actual capitalism with free markets and like people can with less barriers to entry and things like that. They think of the chocolate cartel. That's who they think of when they think of
It's just greed all the time.
Yeah, greed all the time. So then you also have that quote from Noodle. Gonna blank on it at the wrong time, but there it is. The greedy beat the needy every time. Right. It's just the way the world works. She says that to Willy Wonka twice, I think, in the movie. And then so I think all of those various things are good jumping off points. But the thing that I think probably stuck out to me most was the idea of orphan syndrome. So Willy has this vision. He inherited this vision from his mother, this ability to dream, this ability to conceive of things in his mind to not only make his own situation better, but to make that of those around him better by producing a better product. And regardless of his starting point, how difficult that starting point was, he still inherited that dreamer's mentality from his mother. So
right.
on the other side of that, Noodle has all of the characteristics that you already mentioned, has the characteristics of not trusting, that this is just the way the world is, right? This is the greedy beat the needy every time, Willy. It's just the way the world works. And when you look at that and look at, if you were to put both of their experiences and the influences that were on their lives up to the point where they meet, it absolutely makes sense and tracks that one would be, and I don't know that you can necessarily call Noodle a bitter character. I don't think she's bitter at all, but there is kind of, when you talk about not being trusting, when you talk about having some illusions that the world is just evil and a nasty place and it's never going to be any better, like there, that lack of hopefulness can sometimes, you could kind of see that as if this were a real situation, like there would be bitterness growing there.
But I don't know. I might push back on that a little bit, just from a different perspective, because the only reason why you would get bitter is if you know there's better.
Well, I guess maybe I'm conflating hopelessness and bitterness.
Because what I'm saying is the only reason why she wouldn't be bitter is because she doesn't know any different, because she grew up sure. in that environment.
It's kind of the just
and
the
Willy Wonka
quo.
Was the only way, the only in the external source of there is better.
Right.
Her reality was all that there is.
Yeah. And so I think that's ultimately what I'm pointing to here in their relationship is that somebody needed to be directed to the ability to dream.
Right. That's right.
Right. And whereas Willy had a mother who continually taught him how to dream and encouraged him to dream, Noodle had, I mean, what would you call them? I mean, caregivers who forced her into servitude, right? Is that really what it is?
Yep.
So there's just that juxtaposition. But then in addition to that, I kind of see people, human nature, humankind, we kind of have this simultaneous living life as if we're both of them, Wonka and Noodle. On one hand, we see evil things in the world and we kind of turn away to it because we're hopeless that it can ever change. So in the Christian's life, what that looks like is being like, I'm not going to share the gospel with that person because they're never going to accept it, right? I can. There's something better. I'm just jaded to it. I've been I've been yelled at, or you know, people have turned me down so many times. They're not going to come to my church. They're not going to listen to me. They don't want to talk about religious things. They don't want to. So I'm just gonna ignore that conversation.
They might think I'm weird.
Yeah, yeah, they would. yeah, absolutely. For a second, I thought you were thinking that the people I'm talking about would think you're weird. Oh. Like, because you're not willing to stop and not have those conversations.
The reason why you wouldn't share the gospel, like one of the often excuses, like, well, I don't want to look weird, right. I don't want to be that crazy Christian, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But whatever it is that prompts that, it results in kind of a hopelessness and living in hopelessness, not living as if you have the truth. But then on the other side, everyone has these like visions for a better future. Like even the orphan has dreams, right? Mm-hmm. Even the orphan has, you know, she, Noodle in the film, kind of, actually, I think it actually shows up as a drawing in the film, right? Like it kind of an animated thing where she describes what her dream is
at the end,
in the way that she would meet her mom.
Yeah, right? It was at the end, right?
But she that's where she finally does,
right?
But long before that, she describes that picture.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
And so you have her, you have Noodle, who does have a dream with no hope whatsoever of it ever being realized. And then you have Wonka, who's willing to do whatever it takes. Like he knows how to see his dream and believe that it can actually come to fruition, whereas Noodle's more kind of like just imagining, right? At that point in the film. And so what I'm trying to point out is that we kind of play both of those roles as believers, and even before we come to faith, because we know of the better. And we should know, like because of Scripture, that no matter what kind of evil or no matter what kind of things we see in the world, that one day everything is restored. And we should be able to live hopeful like Willie does, right? And we should be able to have a vision, but also not be so, not to have the, I think the phrase you used was lack of street smarts, right? Noodle had the street smarts and Willie didn't have it. But we can also be realistic. Mm-hmm. Like the hopefulness that Jesus in the Bible provides is not a lack of realism, right? Sometimes we act pessimistically and we call that realism, right? We think about the worst case scenarios and we think that the world is, you know, going to hell so quickly and nothing can ever change it and I can't play a part in it. And even if it does go to hell and everything goes bad, I'm not looking towards like God. I'm not looking towards Jesus and seeing him face to face. Like, this is my situation. I'm just in it and this is how it's going to be until it ends.
Yeah, it's, I think it even stops even shorter than that from even faith things, you know. I think it's like, it's still your point, and I might even be a little repetitive here, but any dream at all, right? You get people that are just, you can't do that, or it's going to take too much work, or, you know, I'm just being honest. Mm-hmm. Like those things, yeah. Like I'm just being real.
Yeah.
I mean, I that's kind of your point where, you know, I want to open a bakery or insert dream here. You know, mm-hmm. I want to travel the world, sell the house, all of my stuff, buy an RV, go travel. Well, you can't do that, you know.
Right.
You know, you know, there's too many logistics with that. I'm just being real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't even think that it stops. I think what you're saying is kind of a... it's kind of double dipping a little bit, because it's faith and whatever you described. So like you have the dream and then you have like whatever that other thing is. And we kind of live two separate philosophies, mm-hmm. or ways of operating or whatever that would be called. But even inside of that, we separate faith from our everyday lives. So it's like separated twice. Almost. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then so...
that's where you get like the Sunday, like I'm a Christian on Sunday or at Life Group on Wednesdays or wherever I'm at church, I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. And then through the week at work and stuff, I'm like, I'm a Christian, but I'm not really vocal, or maybe I'm not even a Christian. Maybe I'm doing other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so why is it, and this is more a rhetorical question. I'm not actually asking the question, but more so to make a point. But why is it that we are prone, even Christians, are prone to a pessimistic, and I'm not even talking about in terms of eschatology and things like that, just I'm talking in everyday life, a pessimistic outlook on life and a lack of hope? Because what we just said, what are the marks of orphan syndrome? Lack of trusting, a pessimism, a lack of hope.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that we're struggling with? Well, what we're all struggling with is the reality of this thing called orphan syndrome.
Right.
Right? We are spiritual orphans who are prone to all of these things. And for the Christian, we're learning to live in the truth of our adoption.
Right.
We're learning over time. God has, in sending his son to die for us and to ransom us and to pay the price that we owed for our sin and then to adopt us into the family of God, as we continue to live, we are learning to live in that truth of having already been adopted by God, to already have the status as sons in the family of God. And as we learn that, we develop the ability to dream, to hope, all of the counter things to that orphan syndrome. But sometimes it's still going to come up. Some of us are going to learn and grow at different rates, and we're going to still be prone to some pessimism and to some negative outlooks on life and some lack of hope and all of those things. But when that happens in the Christian life, it's that person learning, or at least opportunities for that person to learn to live in the reality that has already been purchased and secured for them, which is adoption by God into the family of God through Jesus Christ. And for the non-believer, the lack of trust, the pessimism, the lack of hope, the this is all we have type of mentality that it never gets better than this, that's orphan syndrome. It's because those people who have that mentality are lost in their sin and are spiritual orphans.
That's so good.
And so the answer to this orphan syndrome is Christ, to be accepted and adopted into the family of God.
Well, and other orphans for the building up of the church, right?
Yeah.
We need to support each other, and we need to, that's good.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. And then that's ultimately the, in a sense, you know, obviously the movie never would never, you know, say it in that way, but that's ultimately Noodle's journey, is you have somebody who's been taught to dream that has to teach somebody else to dream.
Right.
And so you have this person who's trying to make things happen.
It started with the mom.
Right.
Who taught her son to dream, who then needs to
and the inheritance, discipleship, passing down of all of those things. And so, and then Noodle ultimately regains hope because of the relationship and friendship with Willie.
Right.
Because she sees hope in that. And then that dream is, her dream is realized. She learns to dream. So just like the Christian faith operates and plays out that way, and the way that we live should impact other people, and we should be bringing other people into the faith, giving them hope for their future, giving them hope for the world now, and all of those things. That's exactly what plays out,
right,
with Noodle and Willie.
That's really good. It really highlights the importance of the church, like I was saying. I think that's, when you put it that way and you paint it into that type of picture, the depth of that is powerful. When I was watching this movie, so I have a confession to make.
What is it?
So I watched this movie last night with Kayla, and I was watching the movie.
So it was kind of just on.
So it was just on.
Yeah.
And then I rewatched it this morning. So I watched I watched the first half.
Yeah, you were actually texting me about things completely unrelated to the movie.
As I was watching the movie. Yeah. So I watched the first half. And then I actually watched the second half last night.
Okay.
Okay. And then I woke up this morning and rewatched the first half.
Okay.
Really watched it.
Right.
Okay.
Got it.
And last night, I was watching the end. And I was like, I'm so bored. And then it got to the end. I was like, oh, this is awesome. And I was, you know, super pumped. And I was like, I have no idea how I want to take this movie for the podcast. I have no idea. And then this morning, it dawned on me, and I couldn't get anything else out of it. And you have, and I did text you a little bit about it, because it hit me, and I was like, oh, I can't see anything else. So we can talk about this a little bit, because I want to hear your response, but you've got a money essentially a money laundering scheme, generally speaking, right? So you have the three main chocolatiers, the bad guys, mm-hmm. and they've got this money laundering scheme. Who are they in bed with?
The Catholic Church? Or, what, I mean, it looks like a Catholic Church, right?
They're going to confession. Yeah. So it would be the Catholic Church.
They don't say it. They don't say
Catholic. They
call it a cleric, right?
Right.
A corrupt cleric.
So for specificity, let's just say the religious leaders.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah. The religious leaders. So you have the three chocolatiers. Okay. And then you have the religious leaders in bed together, right? What they're doing is the religious leaders are addicted to the chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Chocolate is essentially like a drug, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They've got this underground vault where they keep the good chocolate for the religious church of that environment. The three chocolatiers provide that good chocolate for money to the religious church in that town or village or whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they water down and give the lay people in the community the crappy chocolate,
mm-hmm.
so that they can save and make more money in that money laundering scheme. What does that sound like to you?
Well, I already know what you're going to say.
So I know.
I'm going to let that hang out there in silence so that maybe the people listening can try to answer.
If you guys know anything about the Reformation, what does that sound like? That has to be. So that's why I'm kind of glad that you went through the history of this director. I'd love to go in and research his history.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was so obvious that it was mirroring the selling of indulgences.
Mm-hmm.
And the chocolate is like the watered down hope, the watered down
work, truth, salvation,
all of that.
Yeah.
You know? And then you have this guy, yeah, Willy Wonka, who comes into town and essentially disrupts the whole operation with his own version of the 95 thesis.
Mm-hmm.
And takes the whole thing down, and everybody gets real.
You've never had chocolate like this.
You've never had chocolate like
this. Right.
I couldn't unsee it after I saw it.
And he's persecuted.
He is.
Like, he's told not to. He's
thrown in jail. He's defiant. Murdered, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I have no idea what the background of, like, the religious background of the directors, and I'm sure there's writers involved too that would have a role in like setting their story in that manner. So like to have those parallels potentially be present, it would be interesting to know if even on a minuscule, like just tiny little level.
It's just so close.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're extrapolating.
Yeah, true.
But it's so close.
Yeah.
There's
the parallels are real. I mean, it's definitely there.
When you read that, when I texted that to you, because I was thinking about it. I couldn't stop thinking about it. When you read that text message, what was your reaction?
Well, I think what I said was, I didn't see that at all.
Well, that's what you said. Like, but I could see you just, I don't know.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's like, I was like, what? And then, and then you ended up explaining, and I'm like, cool. Yeah, I didn't see that. I said, I like it, but I didn't see that.
I mean, it was like they took the story and repackaged it around Willy Wonka.
Yeah, and maybe there's elements.
I don't know if there's a previous, I don't know if the story of Willy Wonka had that in it, like originally, or if this was like an adaptation for the prequel. It just seems so specific to that situation.
Yeah.
And that story. That I can't help but believe that it would You know what I'm saying? That it would be influenced in some way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they definitely had to find, they had to lean into the, you know, making it difficult for Willie, right? I mean, that he couldn't just show up and it be, because in his mind, when he's coming into the city, do you remember the name?
I don't remember the name of the city.
But when he's coming in on the boat, like at that moment in his mind, he doesn't think there's any obstacles at all.
No, he's like, I'm just going to walk in. It's going to be great. Right. My chocolate's the greatest. I'm going to sell it and everybody's going to love it. It's going to be a good thing.
Yeah. So they had to come up with some way to make his journey like extremely difficult. And what better way than every influential entity or person in the film, or the most influential people in the film, are all in bed together, like, kind of corrupt way of doing it, and then he has to reveal their corruption, right? It's not just about him getting his chocolate made, but he also has to reveal the corruption.
Well, no, I understand.
But I guess what I'm trying to get at is, to go along with what you're saying, the Willie's chocolate that no one's ever had chocolate like this before, like, even if you were to put that in religious terms before, that would be true of, you know, in a general sense, not everyone specifically, but that would be true of, you know, the Roman Catholic influence at the time of the Reformation, that you've never had faith like this, that you've never had truth like this presented. So you could even put those, you could say those 95 theses, like, you've never had true doctrine presented.
Right.
You've never had belief like this
right
before. And you could put those words right there and it would fit if you were putting it in that time frame. So I definitely see where you're coming from. I wonder, I wonder if that was an intentional move, like where that somebody was, you know, drawing those lines and saying, well, this might be effective. Let's see how this goes if we adapted it like this. Or if
it just seems so, like, specific to me.
It's just like, we need obstacles. So let's make obstacles.
But see, it's too specific for me to believe that it was like, hey, we just need obstacles. Let's use the Catholic Church. Cause I mean, there was confession booths and stuff. So, like,
yeah,
it was hinting at Catholicism and, you know, the traditions of Catholicism. But, you know, it just seems too specific. Why not just make it a battle between the three chocolatiers and the government? Why specifically use the religious church?
Well, that would be a really good question to ask the director.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, rhetorically, you know, why? It just, it's almost as if they were like, I just read this book on the Reformation. Let's turn this into Willy Wonka's prequel.
Yeah. Or, I mean, maybe he has a Catholic background.
Maybe.
Maybe there's some elements in there and he's seen corrupt church, like, maybe he's been a part of that in some manner before. And something that I've always noticed is, like, when you have, and this is kind of getting off to bring me back to topic, if it's,
no, it's okay, you're good,
want to go, but like, movies, when they present religious figures, and I think it's probably more of a visual choice than anything, but it's very rarely ever a Protestant religious figure,
right? Well, like historical, like,
right, or even modern. Like, sometimes it happens, but,
well, more, what I, like, meant by, you, yeah, what I meant by historical is, like, accurately portrayed.
Oh, well, yeah. What I'm trying to say is, if a main character, whether it's a villain or the hero of the story, is religious, they're going to more than likely be Catholic.
Right.
Because, you know, if a Catholic priest, you can look at somebody and say, oh, that's a Catholic priest, because right, they have that. Or they might be, I haven't seen, you know, not that I've seen a movie recently, but they might be more, a script writer might be more prone to make them Jewish because, you know, they have the visual representation of what, you know, but then Protestant, you don't have all that visual representation, right? So it could be that he just wanted to portray religion as corrupt.
Right.
Right. And that is the placeholder for religion in general.
So you're saying that maybe it wasn't born out of stealing the story from the Reformation. It was just, I just want to show that capitalism and the church is corrupt, so I'm going to put them in bed together to create a Monday.
Like, I'm saying possibly.
Possibly.
Yeah. Like as a possibility, yeah. I could see them arriving. But even then, the more minute details of what you're saying connect a little too easily to just be accidental.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I still think it's too precise to.
Or, you know, again, this kind of all depends on the worldview of the director, and we don't have a lot on that. But, like, maybe you have an unbelieving filmmaker who accidentally created a new Reformation.
Right. Like, right.
Yeah, I don't know. But, so I think all those are possible. But,
yeah, I mean, he just.
I like the parallels.
Yeah. It's like he's got this chocolate. I want to share it to the world, and I'm going to go do it right in front of all the other businesses that are in bed with
right.
the church.
Yeah. In the public square.
Right in the public square.
Yeah. And I'm going to give it directly to the people, not to the gatekeepers and like the people who claim to have authority.
And it was 100 proof.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
Wonka and the Reformation.
Wonka, there's our title. Yeah. stumbled upon that one, but once I saw it, I couldn't unsee it, and I was like, "Oh my gosh!" But anyway, that's all I got, man.
Yeah. Yep. Would you watch it again?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Probably not on your own. Like you want to watch a movie?
Maybe if there was nothing else to watch.
But it'd be in the background. Or would you actually sit? Is it enough like you could rewatch it and actually focus in on it?
I probably wouldn't choose it unless I was watching it with, like, if I needed something to watch with the kids or something. Mm-hmm. Probably not. There'd just be other movies I would choose, but maybe. I don't know. Like, every now and then, it's like, oh, I haven't seen that movie in like 6 years. Let's watch it.
Yeah.
But
I've seen it about 10 times because it's on Max now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lincoln loves it, so we've watched it countless times.
But. Cool. All right. Hey, guys, it's Parker from the Watch Well Podcast. If you liked this video, we want to go ahead and have you subscribe right here on this button. If you want to watch the full podcast episode, go ahead and click right here. And if you want to watch another Watch Well clip, go ahead and click right here. And remember, if you're going to watch, watch well. We'll see you in the next one.